And welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, co-host, and with me today will be Kyle Bond and Scott Tanfield. This episode we will be discussing the 1-1 draw for Fulham on the road against Charlton Athletic. Before we do anything else, I do have to welcome back one of my co-hosts while we wait for Scott to join us. Kyle Bond, my original co-host, is on the line with me. Kyle, it's been a long time since I've talked to you. How are you doing, my friend?
Good. It has been a while. I'm doing well, just hanging out in sunny North Carolina. It'll probably make you up in Boston a little jealous to know that it is 82 degrees and sunny down here. So
yeah, don't tell me that.
I'm enjoying it. Sorry.
That's okay. Listen, I look forward to doing this with you. You and I started this show together, and you have a very busy schedule. So for whenever I can get you on, my friend, I'm so happy to have you join me. And like I said, it's a blast from the past having you on. And we have an interesting match to really go through today. So I look forward to talking to you about this. The first thing I do want to mention, and it's funny, you and I talked about this off air before we really get into this. I watched back the replay. You listened to it and saw the highlight package of it. I want to mention this because I found this low class, and I'm going to say low class, is the fact that Scott Parker, Fulham's captain, kept on getting booed by the Charlton supporters. So I want to get your thoughts on it because, again, I kept hearing it over and over again every time he touched the ball. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate because you look at Scott Parker's career, and obviously, he was with Charlton early, went on loan to Norwich in the early days, and then he spent 4 years there, so obviously he's a big part of that club. But look, Russ, this was 11 years ago. 11 years ago, he went from Charlton Athletic to Chelsea for £12.5 million. Okay, nothing out of the ordinary about that. He's not turning his back on his boyhood club. This isn't a case where, he's going from Sunderland to Newcastle or something outrageous. He's moving from London club to London club. Fine. He's moving to Chelsea 11 years ago in a relatively big move for him in his career. And for the supporters to not be able to let this go, It's a bit of a lot of Chelsea fans will talk about how London clubs have an inferiority complex. I think that is the epitome of an inferiority complex within the game at London. It was sad to see, and I'm sure for Scott personally, who by all accounts is a good person and someone who's enjoyable to be around, I'm sure that was difficult for him to go back to somewhere where he started his career and see how the fans treated him. It was unfortunate.
Definitely. There's no question about that. You know, again, I understand it to some point, but it was so long ago. And someone that actually, played well for them and to continually boo him, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. And, it was disappointing because it was, throughout the match, that's all I kept hearing was booing every time he touched the ball. Kyle, looks like we do have our other co-host on the line. I'm going to bring him on right now. And Scott Tanfield from Friends of Fulham is joining us now. Scott, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Russ. You?
I am doing well. Listen, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
That's no worries, mate. It's good to be on again. It's been a while, I think.
It has been a while. It's funny. It's been a while since Kyle's been on. It's been a while since you've come on as well, and I always enjoy doing it with you, Scott. And listen, we're talking about Scott Parker because again, that was a theme listening to the match, and I watched back the match today, and you cannot stop 2 seconds without hearing it at some point. It seemed like it was all over. You know, I shouldn't say it was constant, but it was frequently heard, the booing for Scott Parker. I want to get your thoughts overall on the result for Fulham, and also the constant booing that we heard from Scott Parker about Scott Parker. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, we had previous conversations. I didn't get to go to the game yesterday. I'm sort of in the midst of moving home and bits and pieces. So I kind of followed online. I didn't really get to see much of the game. But from what I can gather, it was, you know, it was a steady performance from us. People, you know, a lot of fans, I kind of see that they were saying it wasn't good enough. But, I mean, based on Friday's game against Brentford, it, you know, it was like a... Yeah, it was a vast improvement. I think any point away from home at this point in the season is good for us. You know, and we're slowly clawing ourselves past the finish line, as it's supposed. And I've been saying to people, like in the Brentford game, we can't afford to go all out sometimes in regards to the defence that we have, because we just get hit so much on the counter-attack, and that proved that against Brentford. So I think it was a well-deserved point for us, to be honest. I wasn't disappointed with it. The booing with Scott Parker, I don't know. I think Charlton seemed to have an ongoing issue there, didn't they? I mean, I don't know if you remember against Charlton at home once in the Cup. They targeted Danny Murphy and his wife in the crowd.
I do remember that.
You know? So it seems to be a bit of a bitterness that they carry around with players that leave the club, you know? So it's just down to them, to be honest. I just think they're very bitter fans.
You know, listen, it's an interesting situation. I remember the whole situation, obviously, with Clint Dempsey, and Clint Dempsey left the club in a bad way, and I understood, you know, how things were, especially when he first came back. But then, you know, again, everything worked itself out in the end. He comes back to the club, and pretty much, you know, I guess you could say everything is okay with Clint Dempsey. And then there have been other players like Moussa Dembele who came back, and there really wasn't much of an issue with that. That's why, again, I don't understand this one. But like you said, maybe this really has to do more with Charlton fans than Fulham fans.
I think it does. You know, you look at certain players when they leave clubs, they're sort of, depending on how they move. I mean, if you look at Moussa Dembele when he left, he didn't leave under a cloud. You know, he left in the right way. He thanked the fans. You know, when he come back and Tottenham beat us that season, I think it was 2-0. You know, there was no other celebrations. He trotted back to the halfway line, and you know, people applauded him, and you know, and sort of accepted that he'd gone on to bigger, better things. Louis Saha, you know, a different sort of kettle of fish. You know, he tended to get abuse from the fans because every time he scored against us, I don't know why, but he tended to go overboard with his celebrations, you know. So if a player tends to give it, they are going to get it back. As far as Scott Parker goes, I don't know what really lies there, because he's a professional through and through. You know, he left Charlton, I think, for bigger and better things. He was never disrespectful to the crowd or the club. I just think they're bitter rivals, to be honest.
Okay. Well, that, you know, that kind of makes some sense there. And again, it was so prevalent, Scott, listening to the match and then watching it back today. It was just, you know, again, I'm just not that type of fan. You know, again, I was upset when Clint Dempsey left, and I would understand if fans booed him, you know, a little bit. I guess I understand that. We had that talk on Cottage Talk about that in the past. But you know, everything worked out in the end. Like with Clint Dempsey, everything seems to be in the past with that situation, and then you can move on. I mean, this is 10 years ago. You know, that's why it was kind of shocking to me. That's why I just wanted to mention this, and you know, and it just might be about the Charlton supporters, which is fine. That if they want to boo him, they can boo him. I just disagree with that. But let's move on and. Kyle, I'm going to go back to you because, again, you listened to the match, you know, and I just want to get your overall thoughts on what you listened to and the result itself.
Yeah, it's an interesting result because on one end you've got Kit Simons, who, again, is talking about how we deserved more and whatever. But you look, I think it was a fair result, if anything. Charlton seemed like the better team throughout most of the second half. So for Fulham to get on the board so quickly was good, because so often you see this team come out of the gates firing on all cylinders and fail to score, and then either give one up right before halftime and go down, or just not be able to take advantage of the moments where they're on top. Obviously, for most of these games in the championship, you're going to have both sides having good spells at certain points of the game, and you want to be able to capitalize on your good spells and weather the storm through the opponent's big moments. So for Fulham to get on the board so quickly was so positive. They gave it up right away. And then throughout most of the second half, they defended well. There were a couple of chances that Charlton probably should have scored. But overall, I think it was a relatively fair result. For Kit to go once again blabbering about how we should have had more, I guess that's fine. But here in the United States, you'd never see a coach. The closest you'd come to seeing a sports coach complain that their team should have won when they didn't would be from this most recent college basketball national championship when Bo Ryan started blaming the refs after the game for their loss. But that you'd never see that here. So it's kind of weird for us, even being used to it, you know, now for a couple of years, it's still an odd sight. You know, Fulham deserved a draw. Charlton deserved something out of the game, too. They were good. But ultimately, Fulham defended well, which is a positive, as we were mentioning earlier here. So I think it's fine. It's a big point. You always want to get a point away from home. So overall, acceptable.
Okay. Fair enough. Scott, right over to you. I want to get your thoughts because we've talked a great deal about the starting 11, and I was curious what Kit was going to do in this match. So what were the thoughts when you saw the Fulham starting 11 for this match?
I think pretty predictable. I think it's what most people would have kind of guessed. I was looking at Friends of Fulham, and we have like a match day thread that runs, and we tend to talk about the game, obviously, before the team comes in and what they expect, you know, for the lineup to be. I think all bar probably Kavanagh starting, I think others would have kind of expected Ruiz maybe to be in there starting. But other than that, it's what I would have picked, to be honest, out of the squad that we've currently got.
Okay, very interesting. Interesting take there. How about you, Kyle? Were you was this the lineup that you thought Fulham should go with to start the match?
Yeah, there was nothing too upsetting about the lineup. I love seeing Dan Byrne in there. I people who follow me on Twitter would know that I've been championing for Dan Byrne for weeks. poor guy hasn't been able to get into a team that's been horrific defensively at times, but still has not been able to make his way into the team. And a lot of people will say, oh, well, he's not very good on the ball. Fine, that's okay. If you feel that way about him, that's fine. But to me, Dan Byrne is one of, if not the best, set-piece defenders on this team, which is a massive weakness for this team. And we saw in this game, he can defend crosses and set pieces like nobody else on the roster, and it was great to see him in there. His man-marking skills are very good. He's young. He makes mistakes every once in a while. So has just about every other defender on this roster. So to see Dan Byrne get into the side and play well, now obviously I have not seen the replay, but from all accounts, Dan Byrne played really well, and they weathered the storm for most of the second half when Charlton had the better chances. Dan Byrne played very well, and I'm glad to have seen that. I would have maybe thought Brian Ruiz would have been in the match, but I like what Scott said where you can't really go all out attacking in your lineup because the defense has been so lacking at times that you don't want to leave them exposed. So this team is very much defense first, score when you can, and so the lineup reflected that.
Okay. Very good. Very good, guys. All right. What I've done is I've written down some key moments that I took away from this match. And, Scott, before I go to you, did you get a chance to watch the highlights of this or possibly the replay? I just want to just double-check before we go through this.
I managed to catch the two-minute highlights at work today.
Okay, good stuff.
I didn't reflect on the whole game, so.
Not a problem whatsoever, because I'm going to talk a little bit about some of those highlights. And that's how we're kind of going to go through it. I already prepared, you know, that we would just talk about the highlights. And let's just start from the very beginning, Scott. Let's talk about the goal from Ross McCormack. It's only in the eighth minute. And, you know, again, it was flicked on by Matt Smith setting up Ross McCormack and putting Fulham in the lead very early on. What were your thoughts about how this goal came down?
Well, I thought it was very typical of the Matt Smith and McCormack partnership. I mean, if you looked at their kind of partnership at Leeds and a lot of the goals that they scored, it was either sort of individuals from McCormack or it was kind of, you know, sort of knock-ons, flick-downs by sort of Matt Smith, and it kind of reflected that. I think originally the ball, looking from the actual replay, that the ball come from Turner at the back, I think it was. It was a long ball up. I believe Matt Smith kind of flicked it down or slightly over to his left, and then obviously looping header come from McCormack. It was very route one, but it was effective. A lot of times this season we've kind of missed that instantaneous kind of goal scoring, you know, directly from our centre forward. It's been non-existent. You know, you look back at the Brentford game where Smith wasn't up top to start. I mean, the amount of times that ball came into the 6-yard box and there was nothing, there was no end product.
Right.
But Smith just gives you that extra sort of few yards in that penalty area where he can do something with the ball. He's not the most intelligent of players with his feet, but he can make something happen and he can produce a chance for McCormack like we see last night.
Absolutely. He just gives you a different dimension. And I don't think he's as bad with his feet as some might just imagine he would be. I'm glad that you brought it up that way, because I think that he can shoot the ball. You know, unfortunately, it didn't go for him in this match. He had a few opportunities. But, no. You know, I think overall he offers something that we just haven't had. And it's about getting the points right now, Scott. I think you'll agree with me on that. And I think every time he's played, he's made some kind of impact.
He has. And I followed him quite a bit when he was at Bristol City. And I mean, a lot of people may know that I live not far from Gillingham. And when I sort of watched the replay where he single-handedly, I think he took Gillingham apart that evening. I think he scored 4 goals up there. You know, and Bristol City don't play a Route 1 game. They play a lot of attacking sort of football from the wings. And I mean, his positional sense was all over the place with Bristol City. He was knocking goals in from distance, you know, from the 6-yard box. He was quite adaptable. And I think, you know, if he's used wisely at Fulham with McCormack, I don't think we always have to go Route 1. As long as that ball comes into the box, whether it's from, you know, a width angle, you know, or over the top, he's going to be more effective than any other striker that we've got.
I totally agree with you, you know, and that's why I'm glad that you explained it that way, Scott. Okay, let's move on, and I'm going to go back over to you, Kyle, and let's go to the 14th minute, because Fulham actually had another opportunity to make a 2-0, a really good opportunity, a shot by Tim Hoogland, nice save by goalkeeper Stephen Henderson, kept it 1-0. What were your thoughts about the pressure leading up to the goal, and then, of course, the save, you know, the potential? It almost became 2-0 here, Kyle, and unfortunately it was a nice save by Stephen Henderson.
Yeah, their goalkeeper was fantastic all match. He had a couple of nice saves in the second half as well. This team looks very good with the ball in the air. You saw it in the goal. I talked earlier about Dan Byrne being good with set pieces or good defending set pieces. We see Matt Smith, obviously he's outstanding with the ball in the air. And his little flick to Ross McCormack. McCormack's header, Scott didn't seem as impressed as I was. That little looping header is so difficult with the goalie right in your face and to be able to loop the ball over him with enough steam to get past the goalkeeper, but also not enough steam to pop it over the goal. So I was very impressed by that. But also in this little buildup that you're mentioning, there was a nice pullback from the right side of the box. I couldn't tell who it was. And then a headed ball back over to the other side. And it's just, it looks fluid. It looks impressive. And their goalkeeper was great, like I mentioned. Like I said, a number of nice saves, including a couple in the second half. But I was just really impressed with how this team plays with the ball in the air. And it was good that Fulham didn't shut off immediately after scoring the goal. Obviously, they conceded about 8 or 9 minutes later, but Charlton didn't put pressure on the Fulham defense right away after they scored, which we've seen sometimes. this season. So it was good to see Fulham continue the pressure.
Totally. You know, and again, it was, you know, the fact that they were going for the second goal right away was important. Unfortunately, they did concede 8 minutes after they scored their goal, Scott, and it was in the 16th minute. This was a goal by Johan Gudmundsson, scored it. He was unmarked to level the match at 1-1. And I've watched this back several times. It's difficult to tell on the replay and also on the highlight package if he was offside. But my question to you is, should Fulham have done better regardless?
I think so. As I said, I've watched it briefly today. I mean, from the actual 2 minute replay, the it does look offside. But my biggest argument is that too many players tend to protest too much in regards to these situations. I mean, you know, being brought up on football and playing a game quite a bit, you're always taught to play till the whistle goes, whether that player's offside or not. You know, you at least make an effort to at least cover that defender, or, you know, you make an attempt to save the ball. You know, whether it was offside or not, I mean, you've got Marcus Bellinelli constantly waving his hands. You've got, I think, Turner or whatever it was before the ball come across, you know, protesting to the ref. It's close the ball out until that whistle's gone. And you might have just given yourself a bit of luck to keep it out. I mean, you know, that's how I see it.
Interesting. You know, and I tend to agree with you. Just, you know, again, take the goal and then move on. But all the protesting is not the way I was brought up. And I understand it. I just disagree with that type of, I guess you could say, aggressiveness after you've given up a goal. I you know, again, it's just not, it's not my way. It sounds like it's not your way either, Scott. Kyle, right back to you. What are your thoughts about the protesting? You know, again, I've seen it many times from Marcus Bellinelli. I like Marcus Bellinelli. He's got a bright future. I just wish he wouldn't be protesting so much.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You look at the replay, and the offsides would come on the front player. It looks like Gudmundsson at the back post was fine. But the offsides look to be from the front. And it's questionable whether he gets a touch or not. Now, obviously, the referee has to decide, was he involved in the play? Likely, yeah, he was involved in the play, but the referee decided not. We have a saying here in the United States, you've probably heard this before, Russ. I like to live by this, and it's don't give the referee the opportunity to make a bad call.
Yeah.
And that's what Fulham did by switching off and calling for offsides. You look at the replay, by the time Gudmundsson touches the ball in the back of the net, there's no defender within a good 4 or 5 yards of him. They're all behind him, with their hands up. And it's not one person. It's not just Bettinelli. It's not one defender. It's everybody. And it's really, really poor. Anytime there's a borderline call, I give the benefit of the doubt to the referee. It was borderline. Now, Kit laid into the referee after the game. Kit Simon defended his player, saying that it's ridiculous that this goal was allowed, blah, blah, blah. I'm not okay with that either. You know, this, like I said, don't give the referee the opportunity to make the bad call. And it was a judgment call. At the end of the day, it's a judgment call. You can agree with it or not. I would tend to disagree with it. It's close enough that you give the benefit of the doubt to the referee, and you move on and you say, we should have done better. They should have done better. There was nobody marking either one of those players at either the front post or the back post. And it was really, really poor defending. So ultimately, I think there's much more blame on the defending of Fulham than there is on the referee here.
See, you know, it's funny. I mean, I understand, you know, being upset that this happened. But I agree with your take on this, you know. Play all the way through, you know. Fulham are, you know, in my book, you know, they should play it. You know, again, you can't just always rely on the ref. And this is a situation, like you said, when they were turned off and got beat. And, of course, they scored, and the match is now 1-1. And everything changes, as we know. Unfortunately, the match was 1-1, and I thought Fulham really controlled the play. This is really their first major opportunity in the match, Kyle. And now I'm going to go back to you. Because about 11 minutes later, they had a golden opportunity. I'm talking about Charlton had a wonderful opportunity to score. You know, again, the net was wide open for Gudmundsson, but he missed it. He was set up by Beto Kelly. Talk about this and talk about the luck Fulham had on this, because really Fulham should have been down 2-1 at this point.
And it was almost exactly the same play, almost exactly the same. Ball cut across the front of the box, cut across the face of goal to Goodmanson at the back post. That's what's troubling. I think that's something that's been troubling about Kit Simon's tenure this whole time, is that nobody's learning from their mistakes. There's nothing wrong with hiring a new manager or calling up young players and seeing them make mistakes. It's going to happen. Managers in their first job are going to make mistakes. There's nothing wrong with that. I think every Fulham fan understood that. I think people gave Kit Simons the opportunity to make mistakes. You're not going to learn as a manager and get better, or as a player, if you don't get the opportunity to make mistakes early in your career. It's something that everybody goes through.
I totally hear you on learning from their mistakes, because the players are making the same mistakes. It's a valid point. You know, again, we talk about set pieces. You know, this continues to be an issue. You know, like, again, it was better in this match defending set pieces, but defending set pieces has been a recurring theme, Kyle. And again, you know, like you said, learn from your mistakes. You made a mistake once, and this one almost burnt them again, but it didn't, and the match is still at 1-1. And then I'm going to switch all the way to the end of the half, and Scott, I'm going to go back to you, because this is right at the end of the half. Ross McCormack had a great opportunity to score, and unfortunately the keeper made a very nice save. Again, he forced them to make a really nice save on a free kick. Talk about this, and this is just a good opportunity by Ross.
Yeah, I mean, as a team moving forward, I mean, I'm sort of just having a look at it now, actually, as we're talking. A typical McCormack free kick. I mean, we're going to get opportunities like that in games, you know, and 90% of the time when McCormack steps up for a free kick like that, he's going to hit the target. He's not going to score them all. Keepers are going to make saves. Sometimes they are going to go in, but it all does reflect back on what we do in games, unfortunately, and it's putting, you know, our chances to bed. You know, when you're up in games like we were at Charlton, you know, you're expected to try and at least score two goals. That's unfortunately how you win, well, not unfortunately, but it's how you win games. And if you don't score, we're going to get caught. It was a fantastic opportunity for him to make it maybe 2-1, but I feel there are other opportunities in the game, you know, where people could have scored, to be honest.
I totally agree with you. Listen, the opportunities are there, especially when we finish up with the stats. The stats are just going to blow you away, because the stats really do favor Fulham in this match. And that's going to lead me to just share the halftime stats and get your thoughts on this part of the statistics there, Scott. Here are the halftime stats, and I just want your feedback on it. Let's start with possession. Fulham had 55% to 45% on Charlton. Shots, Fulham had 6. Charlton only had 3. This is on target. Fulham had 3. Charlton only had 1. They only had 1 the entire match, by the way. Corners, this one's interesting. Fulham only had 1. Charlton actually had 6. Crosses, Fulham had 6. Charlton had 13. Tackles, Fulham had 8. Charlton had 4. Shots blocked, Fulham had 1 shot blocked by Charlton, and fouls were 3-2 in favor of Fulham. What do you get out of these halftime stats?
I mean, it looks like we kind of weathered the storm a lot better in this game in regards to, obviously, crosses coming in corners. So I think it's maybe proving a point that we've dealt with it a little bit better, sort of on an aerial presence. I mean, normally we... teams have 1 cross and they score 1 goal. That's kind of been the story of the season, to be honest. You know, collectively as a team, I think, you know, again, we've had a little bit more possession. 56% to Charlton's, whatever. I mean, you can call that kind of equal. We've had a couple of shots blocked. You know, they've had one. You know, looking back at them kind of highlights, I honestly feel it was an even game, and the score reflected that, to be honest. You know, I think both sides had the opportunity to win that game. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. You know, the guy not scoring for Charlton, you know, McCormack not scoring that free kick. You know, it could have quite easily swung both ways. So on a high, you know, on a highlight of the stats, I think it was an evenly sort of spread game. But I think we defended better on a whole, to be honest.
Okay, very good. Kyle, over to you. What stands out to you from the halftime stats?
Well, I mean, I completely agree. It seemed like an even game, and it continued into the second half. You know, there's not too much you want to take out of 40 statistics over 45 minutes, but it was exactly as it looked. You know, Fulham was pressing early and good, got their goal, and then after a little bit more positive spell, had to do a little bit of defending, and that's just about what you're going to get here in the championship. Nobody's miles better than anyone else, and you know you don't see those 3-0, you know, comprehensive victories as much in the championship as you do in the Premier League. So it's just about what you'd expect.
Okay, very good. All right, let's move on to the second half, and Kyle, I'll go right to you. Fulham had a fantastic opportunity to score right at the beginning of the second half with as Matt Smith's header was cleared off the line by Gomez. Talk about this. This is a really great opportunity for Fulham to be up 2-1 early in the second half.
Yeah, and you look at the replay, Ross McCormick actually does something incredibly athletic. He touches an overhead kick right about the edge of the 6-yard box, right to Matt Smith. The connection that those two have is pretty impressive, because McCormick has his back to Smith and still knows exactly where he is to touch an overhead kick to him. But it's fantastic, you know, last-ditch defending by Charlton. And this was maybe Fulham's best opportunity where they didn't score. And it's funny, because you look at Smith. Smith gets the overhead kick from Ross McCormick, and he goes with the ball right to his head. He doesn't bother with his feet. He touches it once with his foot and pops it up to his head. He'd rather shoot with his head than shoot with his feet. And while I don't think he's terrible with his feet, because the first touch is nice, he certainly would rather have the ball in the air than on the ground. But it was good defending by Charlton, and they really took over from there.
No, they actually did, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because right after that they really had a few chances to score by Tony Watt. But again, the score stayed level at 1-1. But Fulham were reeling a bit. And, Scott, that's going to lead me to ask you your thoughts on this, because I think this is a pivotal point of this match, was the double change by Kit Simons, bringing in Brian Ruiz and Kaká and taking off Danny Guthrie and taking off Sean Kavanagh. Because at this point, Fulham, you know, again, they were really struggling. They were moving the ball at a very slow pace, whereas in the first half they were moving the ball around pretty good. But things changed when they brought on these two players. Just share with me your thoughts about bringing on these two types of players. I know you didn't watch the match, but what do you think about bringing on these two players at I believe at 68 minutes in?
Well, I mean, the problem that you got, and what we've experienced a lot this season under Kit Simons, is that we've as a team or as a manager, we've been very tactically naive. We've not approached games correctly, and I don't think we've changed games correctly during to kind of sway the pressure or to bring the game back into our favour. There was a discussion going on earlier on whether the actual changes were due to Kit Simons last night or whether they were due to Kerbishley, who was sitting up in the stand, because someone said that he walked down and literally sort of seconds after he had been down and consulted, obviously, the bench, Kit Simons, the two changes were made. So was Kerbishley seeing something from, obviously, a distance that maybe Kit wasn't, and advised for these changes to be made? As I said, I wasn't there at the game last night. I watched a highlight, so I can't really reflect on how the game changed. But for us to make a positive attacking or a creative move like that says to me that, you know, somebody had some eyes and ears over the game last night. And unfortunately, did it pay off for us? It probably did, because if we'd have kept things as they are, would we have gone down and lost 2-1? Probably. That's happened in games. So I think it was a positive move, and I think it's something that we should have been practicing to be doing over the season.
Listen, that's an interesting theory about Kerbishley, because I thought it had a very positive effect for the rest of the match. And Kyle, I know that you have to drop off shortly, so before you do, I want to get your thoughts about this this change in the match when the double change was made. And what are your thoughts about what Scott said, his theory about possibly Kerbishley might have been involved in this situation?
Yeah, I was just going to jump in here because I think that's an interesting point that you bring up, Scott. And what it makes me think of is a recent trend in American football is sending assistant coaches up into the press box or into a coach's booth up above the field so that they can see everything. And coaches have actually come out and said, and in the world of coach here in the United States, this is striking, is that coaches have said, look, you can see 1,000 times more up in a booth than you can from the sidelines. And that's a striking quotes from guys who are normally very reserved about saying things that break trends or that break the status quo. And so maybe they put Kerbishley up there to see some, especially in a game like football where, you know, you can see so much more from a better angle up above. I mean, look at where TV cameras are, obviously. You don't even think about it. Imagine putting a TV camera down on the sidelines and that was where you saw the game from. You know, it'd be ridiculous. You wouldn't be able to see anything. So I think that's an interesting move that maybe Kerbishley saw something, like you said, Scott, that Kitt didn't. And then and while the changes didn't really have the desired effect that, you know, Fulham didn't go forth and attack and push forward, they actually ended the game on the back foot. They didn't have to deal with as much pressure than they were starting to have to deal with once the changes were made. So they definitely had a positive impact. It didn't exactly have the offensive firepower that we would have hoped, but it certainly shored things up in the middle and got some fresh legs on and had a bit of an effect. So I think that's a great point by you, Scott, and hopefully that would be something that we employ in the future, not just positive attacking changes, but also maybe having some eyes and ears up above, because it could certainly be beneficial.
Absolutely, and that's why I really am in favor of Kerbishley being involved, Kyle. Before you go, I just want to mention this, that, you know, again, nothing against Kitt. I always think that it's beneficial to have someone beside you, or like you said, up above, that can see things that you're not seeing. You know, again, that, you know, again, we know from other sports that's common practice. And if someone's seeing something that you're not seeing, but it can be beneficial, I say go for it. I say you do it. And maybe that's exactly what happened. Again, we're theorizing here. But if Kerbishley was involved with the decision, then it's a good thing. It's a good thing. And I want them to be more positive, you know, in the second half. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kyle.
I was just going to say, and something I mentioned earlier was that I feel like Kitt Simons is not learning from his mistakes this season. Maybe that's because he doesn't have anybody more knowledgeable instructing him on where he's making mistakes. So if Kitt has an influence like Kerbishley who can tell him, look, I don't think this was the right move, maybe you should have done this instead, then maybe he'll start to learn from his on-field mistakes because he has someone telling him, hey, this might not have been a good idea. You know, if you're making mistakes in the field and you're seeing losses but you don't know why, you need to have an influence that informs you, somebody more knowledgeable, more experienced, that says, hey, look, maybe this was a better option than this. That could be beneficial for Kitt Simons. Maybe we see some improvement in his game management going forward.
Well, I certainly hope so, because that's been a fair criticism of Kitt. You know, it's funny, you say learning from your mistakes, and that's something that I've always noticed, that we keep, you know, again, doing the same things over and over again. We're not learning from our mistakes. Is Kitt learning from his mistakes? And maybe Kerbishley being involved will help him in that process of maturing as a manager. Listen, Kyle, I know you have a busy schedule. I want to thank you for joining us today on College Talk Extra Time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Russ, for asking me to come back. I always love coming back here. I remember you and I started this a whole ways back, and it has grown to new heights. So thanks for having me back on, and hopefully I can come back a little more often and and relatively soon. So thanks for asking me, Russ. I had fun.
Oh, great. Thanks, Kyle. All right, okay. I'm going to let Kyle go right now. That was Kyle Bond, who is my original co-host on Cottage Talk, and he was able to join us for about 40 minutes. And, Scott, you and I are going to finish off the show, and, you know, I will I'll go through some of the key moments with you all, you know, because, again, I watched it, so I'll just share my thoughts on it. And then we'll talk about a couple different things. But I want to go back before we move on. I thought Kyle really brought up a good point. A criticism I've had of Kit Simons is the ability to learn from his mistakes. What are your thoughts about what Kyle just said? It kind of goes a little bit with what you were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I've always I was never a fan of the Kit Simons appointment. I've never said I was, and I've always expressed my opinion about that. I just felt that after the sacking, or, you know, allowing Magat to completely ruin that team, that, you know, we took a chance on Kit Simons, and I feel that the appointment was made probably more on, you know, sort of fan pressure. But then I heard some sort of rumours in the background that he wasn't necessarily the club's first choice. I think we were pursuing Steve Bruce at the time, and because obviously Kit was in charge and winning games, the transition to keep him in charge and obviously work with the kids was the better option, rather than to rip the pallet up again and cause more sort of negativity. You know, you've got to look at the situation, and yes, you know, we've employed Kit to do the job that he's done, but then we all know that with a new appointment, you get a new kind of manager bounce, you know, you get a string of results, and then obviously, you know, things do tend to sort of go downhill from there if they're not maintained. So you've always got to look at the club's perspective and think, you know, where was plan B when this was going to happen? Because, you know, there was no one brought in to help Kit at the time.
No.
You know, you're looking at an unexperienced sort of, not an unexperienced manager, but a manager that's only had experience of working with the under-21s, but has had no experience whatsoever, you know, working with the first team. And there was just nobody brought in. So what was the club's thinking? I mean, we can blame Kit. We can, you know, we can point the finger at him. You know, all managers need to learn, you know, with the resources that he's had. But, you know, where was the backing for this guy when it really counted? It wasn't there, you know?
No, it's a good point, Scott. And, you know, again, I know we're focusing on the double change, but, again, it is a little bit of a difference. You know, I noticed a difference that I haven't seen in prior matches. That's why I'm glad that you brought up what you brought up that you've been hearing, because, again, it just seemed different. I know Kyle said we weren't, you know, incredibly positive. I would disagree with Kyle on this because, again, what was going on at this time in the match is that that Charlton were extremely disciplined at this time. They were resolute defensively, and Fulmer having a hard time breaking them down. You know, and at that point, that's when the change was made, and you could see Fulham having a little bit more life, and Ruiz was more central, and that actually really helped out the situation. Again, we did not score, but we had a few opportunities, Scott, and I'm just going to go through them with you real quick, because after this substitution, you know, I noticed a difference right away. Ruiz played the ball to Matt Smith, who set up McCormack for a nice shot on target. This was almost right after the double change. And then in the 77th minute, Smith set up Ruiz, and his shot just went wide. Again, a wonderful opportunity for Brian Ruiz. Unfortunately, he could not score. In the 89th minute, Matt Smith had a shot that was just too high. Again, it was, you know, again, that was like an opportunity that I thought maybe he should have let Brian Ruiz take, but he decided to take it, and it went high. And at the very end of the match, you know, again, we were talking about this earlier, Scott, Ross McCormack had a wonderful opportunity on a free kick just outside the box. Unfortunately, it just went over the bar, and the match ends 1-1. But again, you know, I love Kyle. I actually disagree with him on us being more positive after the change, because I do think we were more positive, especially after I did watch the replay, and the tenor of the match changed because they were, you know, they were very resolute in the second half. You know, again, they were difficult to break down. That was a change I noticed from Charlton, Scott. They were difficult to break down in the second half. And when he made the change to Ruiz and Kaká, it kind of opened them up a little bit, just a little bit. And we could talk about who made the decision, but I'm just telling you, I think it was the right decision. In the end, it didn't get us any more than a point, but it certainly probably had a factor of us at least getting a point. That's the way I look at it, Scott.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I did mention it. I think personally, if we hadn't made the changes, then we were probably looking another sort of 2-1 defeat if we didn't change things up, because we've been known to get boring, a bit stale during games, and when we haven't rectified the problems, that's when we've been hit. And we've gone to pieces at the back. I thought the change was positive. I thought it was completely different from what we've attempted in games before, which leads me to believe that it might have been an idea from Kerbishley. I mean, he walked down for whatever reasons. I'm sure it wasn't to give Kit Simons a cup of coffee. I'm sure it was to give tactical knowledge from what he was seeing. And the game, as we've done many times, we've got deeper and deeper and deeper. We needed to play a higher line, not necessarily to, like you say, you know, maybe go and score, but to then put the pressure back on Charlton, which I thought, rather than falling a lot deeper, we managed to hold that byline. I mean, regardless of what people think of Brian Ruiz, and his faults sometimes about being a lazy player, there's one thing that Ruiz does, and he can hold a ball higher up the line. He will give you three or four extra moments on a ball for people to move.
Absolutely.
And he bothers you that time. So I can see the reasoning. You know, you bring him on, he plays a higher line, then you bring Kaká actually on, which can then pull the defence slightly wider, opening the gaps up, obviously, for McCormack and Smith. That's the reasoning. It didn't come off, but we could have scored from it. But the point of the fact was, we tried something new, we tried something fresh, and we didn't go and concede. So, for me, I see that as a positive.
So do I. You know, and again, you basically described exactly what happened, Scott. You know, they both had their effect, you know, and like you said, the biggest takeaway, yes, Fulham did not score from these opportunities that were created, but they also did not concede a second goal. And that's very important. It was important to get something out of this match. Am I disappointed that Fulham only got a point? I know this is going to sound strange, Scott, but I'm not disappointed that they only got a point because they needed to get something from it. You know, would I have liked them to get all three? Of course. Was the opportunity there? Of course. But for me, it was more important to get something out of it than to get nothing out of it. I think nothing out of it would have been harsh, and it would have been hard on them going into the Wigan match. So I think this point is very valuable. Would you agree with that?
No, I agree. If you ask majority of the fans before the game, they would have taken a point, especially away from home. Too many times this season, I sat through it against Brentford. I didn't actually sit through it against Brentford. I sort of left after the second goal went in because I knew exactly what was coming. And time again this season, I've sat through it and sat through it and sat through it, and it's been constant and, something that's needed rectifying. And it's all this debate, sort of like changing it up a little bit now and talking about, you know, people are moaning about why Pat Robbins isn't getting game time and stuff like this. I mean, you know, the lad's young, he's not physical enough, and you're not going to play him in times of, you know, when you've got a relegation scrap on the go, when, you know,
right,
mid-table, fine, you're going to play Pat Roberts and hopefully he scores you a couple of goals. But, you know, like what we've done, I thought we were sensible last night. We could have quite easily got broken again, but we didn't. We gained a point, and I think the plan is to crawl over the line. And I think, touching wood, I think another win, and we're just about there, to be honest.
I totally agree with you. And at this point, I hate to put it this way, and I said this on the last show, Scott, what's so disappointing is that I'm going to talk to you right now about relegation. We're in April, and we're talking about relegation again.
Yeah.
I'm disgusted by that. All Fulham supporters should be disgusted by it, but it is what it is. We have to talk about it. It's still there. Until they take care of business, it's still there, so we have to talk about it. We have to deal with it. So it is about survival. It is getting over the line. And once you get over the line, then we could talk about next season. We could talk about building a new phone, because right now we are treading water and just trying to get to shore, basically. That's all that's going on right now. We're trying to get to shore. And that's all I want at this point. I want them to get to shore and then I guess you could say really get into rebuild mode, because I thought this would be the rebuilding season. We could see improvements. I've seen individual improvements, but we're still not putting it together. It's a bunch of pieces, and I think that there's talent there, but we just cannot put it together. And I heard someone say to this the other day, talking about Fulham, and if this was another team, they would have beaten Charlton. And you know what? They might be right about that. Based on the stats, maybe Fulham should have won this match. But in the situation that they're in, it's very difficult for a team that's struggling to get all 3 points on the road. So that's why I will take the little victory, which is, well, not even a victory. Obviously, it's a point. I will take that point because it's valuable. It's about getting us safe, and then we can concentrate on the future.
Yes.
All right, Scott. That's going to lead me to go through the stats with you and get your thoughts on it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read to you the Opta evaluation that just came over on the Fulham website because I find it interesting. And I'm going to follow that up with the full-time stats and just get your thoughts on it. Sound good?
Yes, far away.
Okay, let's start with the Opta evaluation. Honours were even at the Valley as Fulham drew 1-1 with Charlton Athletic on Tuesday night, but Fulham boss Kit Simons felt his side had the better of play and the stats back him up. Fulham had almost double the number of shots managed by the host, 13 to the home side, 7, with Ross McCormack and Matt Smith both having 5 efforts each. Addicts goalkeeper Stephen Henderson was called into action on 4 occasions, while Fulham's number 1, Marcus Bettinelli, faced just 1 single effort that hit the target, Johan Gudmundsson's contentious goal. The away side enjoyed the lion's share of possession, 57.8%, and our passing accuracy was superior too, as the boys completed 81% of their 572 balls within the 90 minutes. Charlton delivered 161 fewer passes with a poor passing accuracy of 73%. And so our frustration at not winning the game is understandable. However, the two sides did play a similar number of key passes, with the Southeast Londoners delivering 7 to our 8. Captain Scott Parker was busy in the return of the Valley, recording the highest number of touches of anyone on the field, 112. Known for his passion and commitment, Parker came out on top of 7 duels for the ball and put in 4 tackles during the match. Parker was key in other aspects of play too, keeping possession well as he delivered 87 of his 100 passes accurately, which was more than twice as many as Charlton's best Alou Diarra. Okay. And that's the Opta evaluation. The stats are the full-time stats. I gave you the halftime stats. The full-time stats are Fulham had 58% possession to 42, total shots 13 to 7, as I just mentioned. On target, this one's actually kind of revealing. Fulham had 6, Charlton Athletic had 1. Shooting accuracy, Fulham were at 46%, which is decent. Charlton Athletic were at 14%. Passing accuracy, just mentioned, 82 to 74%. Corners, this one's interesting. Charlton Athletic actually had more corners. They had 7, Fulham only had 2. Crosses, Fulham had 15, Charlton Athletic had 23. Crossing accuracy, Fulham were better at 20%, and Charlton Athletic were at 9%. Fouls, Fulham had 7, and Charlton Athletic had 11. Those are your full-time stats along with the Opta evaluation. Scott, what jumps out to you? Are you there, Scott?
I'm still here, so I'm just kind of I'm absorbing all that.
sorry.
After a long day at work and everything else, it's work figures all day, and it's kind of like, my head's trying to work that one out. Again, as I said, like, I didn't watch the game last night. I wasn't there. From what I've seen,
you know, from the car perspective, I mean, it looks like we got stuck in a little bit more. I think a game previous, I don't think we picked up one yellow card, did we? If it's like someone against Walls away, where we didn't actually, I don't think we committed one foul, did we, in the whole 90 minutes? So I think we got stuck in a bit more in that game. As I said, from the crosses and the corners, it looks like we dealt with a lot more kind of aerial presence from Charlton that was dealt with. And again, from attacking force, I think we had a go, but I think, based on them stats, I still think the game was fair at a 1-1 finish. It could have gone either way, but I just don't think we're in a position at this moment in time where we can go all out attack and try and take a team to pieces without conceding the other end. So I think we've done our job adequately on the night, and I think a point was a well-deserved point.
Okay, so you've... So you slightly disagree with the full manager, but you know, it's understandable the way that you said it, Scott, and I, you know, and I could see your point here, because again, like I said, you already said this. If you ask any Fulham supporter, would they be happy with the point? The answer would be yes. And if you go all out for all 3 points, you can leave yourself wide open. The fact that we were more resolute defensively, I think, is important, and I'll take the point. The stats might favor us here, and they do. They absolutely do. But you brought up a good point. You know, I know you didn't watch the match, and I know that you only saw the highlights, but you bring up a valuable point here, is that they actually did have some good opportunities themselves. They only had one shot on target, but they were dangerous as well. So to get a point on the road, I think, is valuable, Scott, and I think your analysis is good.
I mean, if you look at them opportunities that flash past the post quite a few times from Charlton, I mean, a foot either side, they're in. You know, we still did dangerously on a couple of opportunities, but, I mean, you know, we didn't do our usual and concede sort of early. We conceded early-ish in the first half, but we never conceded at the end of the first half from another kind of set piece or cross. And, you know, stats do lie. I mean, look at the Leeds game, for argument's sake. You know, we absolutely battered Leeds, but we're in a loss 3-0 because we can't defend as a unit. Now, people saying last night, you know, we should have gone for it, we should have beaten them 3-1. Yeah, in hindsight, when you're a mid-table side and, you know, you've got nothing to play for, then maybe we could have had a bit more of an attacking sense and it didn't really matter about the other end. But at this moment in time, and it's happened so many times this season, we concede after concede. I mean, we've shipped 70 goals this season.
It's terrible.
We're not a team. We're not a team that can get the ball down and go, I tell you what, we're going to go and get 3 goals now and not worry about the other end, because we're not built like that. I think we've done well to get our early goal. We could have capitalised on it, but it wasn't to be. But I also felt that Charlton are no mugs. They're a decent side. And for the 90 minutes, we contained the game. And in areas of pressure, we dealt with it well. And it's shown in other games. Brentford, you know, Christ. I mean, how many do we want to list this season where we've just fell to pieces? Last night, I just thought on a positive sense was slightly different. We dealt with it in a different way. We approached it tactically in a different way. All right, we didn't get the 3 points. Most people were disappointed, but we got a point, and I thought it was a well-deserved point.
Listen, I totally agree. You know, and I'm looking at it, and I'm just looking at the alternative. Think about what the alternative would have been if we lost this match.
Of course,
so, you know, again, I know it's a small thing, but I think it could be pivotal. 1 point here, going into the Wigan match, we know how important the Wigan match is.
Mm.
If you go into that match losing, there's even more pressure. There's a little pressure off, which can allow you just to play. That's the way I look at it. I think it actually takes a little heat off where that they can just play Friday, because it really is about the next two matches, Scott. And getting something out of this match is important, because I think it will allow them to have confidence going into the match that they can win it and not be thinking about what, you know, the downside if they lose against Wigan. I think that point just can give them the confidence that they need to basically take away, basically go into that match and take it to an opponent that they should beat. But, you know, with your confidence being down, if you lost that match, I think it would have been just a little bit harder. I think this has made it a little bit easier going into this match. Do you see where I'm going on that?
No, I totally agree. I mean, if we'd gone 1-0 up last night and got sucker punched again and lost 2-1, 3-1, which is our usual approach in games, I think it could have been catastrophic going into Friday's game. You know, everyone's talking about, you know, all we need to do is just beat Wigan, Rotherham and Blackpool. And, you know, I mean, Christ, I mean, from being a Fulham supporter, how easy do you know that being? That's never the case. It'll end up us being sort of beating someone like Middlesbrough or somebody like that. Or having to go to Norwich and getting three. I mean, that's my biggest fear, having to go to Norwich and getting the points there. But it will be like us to do it the hard way round. You know, Wigan's not going to be easy. I mean, they put on free coach travel. They're going to bring a few more fans than normal. They've sacked Mackay. They're going to be on a new manager-type bounce.
That's right.
They're going for it. And, you know, we haven't got any given right just to turn up on Friday night and beat Wigan. I don't expect us to. I expect us to put in a good performance. But if we get another draw, we get another draw. It's another point. And it's another point closer to the way that we claw ourselves to safety. If we get 3 points, fantastic. We can put it to bed. But at the same time, you know, we've got to go into these games and defend well, and we've got to perform well as a team. None of these games are going to be easy. And if fans expect us to turn up and beat the likes of Wigan and Rotherham, who are now fighting for their lives, and also turning up at Blackpool, who now have no pressure on them whatsoever to play football and get 3 points, I think fans are going to be a bit slightly shocked, to be honest.
They're going to have to really, you know, put their noses down and really gut it out. You know, that's the best way I can put it. They need to gut these matches out. And it's funny because I was talking to Cottage Talk co-host offline yesterday, Emilio Danello, and he said to me, he wouldn't be disappointed if Fulham got a point on Friday and a point against Rotherham, because in a way we'd be hurting them because they need the 3 points as badly as well. So by even us getting a point against Wigan, that hurts Wigan. You get a point against Rotherham, that hurts Rotherham. So again, it's a little bit of addition by subtraction, Scott. Mm. You know, I think it's important to win the match, but I agree with you. Even if we got a point, I don't think it's the end of the world. I just think that it keeps the pressure on, but it also hurts your opponent. Losing these next two matches could be devastating. That's the way I look at it. They need to get some points from these next two matches. If they win one, I think they're pretty close to safety. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of pressure going in, but that's why I thought this point was important, because I think it just takes it off. It just says, you know what, if we play our match, like you just said, if we play the way that we can play, we can beat this team. But we mm-hmm. cannot go in there expecting to win, and we can't be afraid to win. I think this allows them not to be afraid to win and just play, but they have to play well, if that makes sense.
I think, just touching on that as well, I mean, you're looking at, you know, when people expect you to win games or to beat the Wigans and Blackpools and Rotherhams at home, I mean, yeah, that's fine. I mean, you know, when we were in the Premiership under Roy, you'd always have sort of home games that were bankers. You'd always say, well, you know, we'll beat Everton, we'll beat Newcastle, we'll beat Wigan, you know, and you could pick your points and kind of tally yourself up. But fans have got to realise that this season we've almost completed a season with a team that's been, apart from a few games when we had the new manager bounce under Simons, a team that's been absolutely depleted in confidence all season. And what you're expecting the team to do is come out and play with confidence and roll a ball around and, you know, expect to beat these Wigans and these Rotherhams and you know, and these sides at home. And that isn't the case this season. You know, with the way things are, you know, the way that the team's been, you know, sort of built and stuck together, you're not going to get that, not this season anyway. Anything that we pick up from now till obviously the end of the season, whether it's a point here or we get a lucky 3 points, I think is a bonus, because you look at that division, you know, you look at the teams that are down there, and like people say, if there wasn't three worst teams in that division this year, regardless of Kit Simon's bright start that he had, we'd probably be relegated this season or very much down there in that bottom three.
No, listen, it's funny because Mike Gregg actually put up a stat that after Boxing Day, I believe we are second worst in the division. talking about results. And that's and you know what, Scott? That's the truth. You know, again, the numbers don't lie. You know, again, the results don't lie. And I said this to a friend. I said, form it like a box of chocolates from, like, Forrest Gump. You just don't know what you're going to get. You know, they can beat Derby County. You know, they could beat Derby County. And then they can get shellacked, you know, in a match that you're, you know, I shouldn't even say expecting. You're hoping that they could get something out of him, possibly win. And it's been happening left and right. I actually, to be honest with you, I predicted a 3-1 loss against Charlton Athletic. I did. So yeah. I guess you could say I'm pleasantly surprised that they got a point, you know, because I didn't expect it. And I'm not expecting this this huge victory against Wigan. But honestly, if you know, that's why I think this point is so valuable, because it is about confidence. They have this frailty when it comes to confidence, and I think getting the point is something that can give them confidence. You know, you could talk about that. We could talk about how they got those 3 points on the road against Huddersfield Town when they really had no. You know, they didn't, you know, again, if talk about stats, you know, stats-wise, they didn't deserve it, but they were resolute enough to, you know, to weather the storm and get all 3 points. So that's why, you're right, there's, you know, we can't expect them to beat Wigan. But if they play well, they can beat Wigan. That's the way I'm looking at it. I completely agree with you, Scott. It's all about confidence. Right now, unfortunately, this season has been about a lack of confidence, a lack of continuity. You know, you look at Brentford, and I always use Brentford as an example, and it hurts to say this. I watched the Brentford match the other day. I watched this because I found it interesting how they go down 2-0, and they are able to get a point at the very end because they are resolute. They play together as a unit. They're not more talented than Fulham. They play better than Fulham. You know, that's what this comes down to. What gives me hope for the future, Scott, is that I think that there's talent there, but it needs to be harnessed together to play as a team. Brentford plays as a team. That's the reason why they are where they are. Middlesbrough play as a team. You know, again, there's a reason why they are where they are. They're not, you know, again, it's a very even division. What it comes down to, individuals playing against teams. You have to play together as a unit. And the best teams are the teams that play well together and are drilled and fight for each other. I'm not saying that this team doesn't fight for each other. I'm just saying that it's been such mix and match the entire season. There's no way that there can be continuity, and we're lacking continuity. We're lacking confidence, and I think that's why we are where we are, Scott.
Yeah.
I'm going on a little bit of a rant.
It's part and parcel of that. It's, you know, you've got to look at the whole kind of philosophy behind this season, and you know it's down to three sectors. It's down to poor ownership, it's down to poor man management, and it's down to obviously lack of quality in the squad. You know, you've got to be an absolute madman or very inexperienced or clueless when it comes to football to allow, you know, a German dictator, as he's known in the game, that's got credibility for it, to come to you and say, I've done this in the Bundesliga, I can get rid of every single one of these players, I can win you the championship, you know, by just using the youngsters alone, you know, with training them sort of like 9 hours a day. If you had someone of any credibility in that club, like a Mike Rigg or somebody, to turn in the way and say, you're off your rocker, that wouldn't have happened, but for some reason that was allowed to happen. You know, and I just don't believe that a philosophy of the championship of being a physical, well-drilled side that's played together for ages, 4-4-2, you know, that some German was going to come in and completely just re-sculpt that division. It's just complete madness. So you've got that. You know, the way that he was allowed to dismantle that squad, you know, then you've brought a kind of an inexperienced under-21s manager into the loop and said, you know, sort this out or manage this, that's had no experience. you know, you've had to throw a lot of youngsters in that mix that you wouldn't even consider playing in one season, let alone kind of introducing as one or two players throughout the season. And then you backed it up with no plan B, and you failed to bring in experience until you've employed Mike Rigg in March, when he should have been, all right, he couldn't be at the club until January, but because you've had no resources, you haven't made any transfers, you haven't made any investments. It's been an absolute mess from start to finish. And I couldn't agree with you more. I know, and it could get worse, Russ. You know, if we're relegated. But you look at it from start to finish, and if you kind of look at the whole situation, you think to myself, I tell you what an absolute mess.
Listen, it is, Scott, and you know. Listen, I'll be the first to admit, I'm a glass half full guy. I've been pushed to the limit on my glass half full. Okay, I'll be the first to admit it. I am totally a glass half full. I always look for the silver lining. I'm still looking for the silver lining. But here is one thing that I completely agree with you on. It's been a disaster of a season. It's about surviving. It's about getting through this season and then redoing Fulham Football Club like I wanted to last season. And you bring up a valuable point. You know, McGath came in, and McGath wanted to change how the championship is played. And it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way against well-drilled teams, teams that know how to play in the division. You know, and they took advantage of Fulham. And it started right from day one, right from the first match, when you saw a team like Ipswich Town, I can go all the way back there, and how, you know, how they just took advantage of their opportunities. And, you know, that was an even match, but they took advantage of their opportunities. And it's been like that the entire season, Scott.
I was at that game, Russ, at Ipswich, and it was literally men against boys. And we were all optimistic. We turned up in numbers, and, you know, we thought this guy was possibly, you know, we'd done it in the Bundesliga and this. Now, I think the fans were slightly naive as well in regards to, you know, some did say that it would go wrong. And I looked at it, and I just thought to myself, you know, this looks like men against boys here. You know, this really doesn't bode well. And from that moment, I thought to myself, I've got a sneaky feeling that we could be in a bit of trouble here. And it got worse and worse and worse as the games went on, you know?
It did. And it really, you know, again, we had the respite. We had the little break when Kick came in. And, you know, and again, we are struggling to find the right mix. We have a lot of youngsters. We have some experienced players, but again, it just hasn't, you know, again, it's the lack of confidence, the lack of continuity going against teams that are very confident and know how to play together. And you're just asking for trouble. Like you said, it really has been a season, Scott, if I could really nail it down, it's a season of men playing against boys. It's really what it is.
Yeah, I totally agree. But
I'm sorry. Do you have something else you wanted to add, Scott?
No, I'll just say it's, you know, I know we all keep going on about it, or I keep going on about it, but just from a whole perspective, I think we've got to put some sort of blame on the ownership of Fulham Football Club being naive in what they can achieve. You know, and it's not just the football on the pitch; it's certain aspects behind, you know, behind the game, you know, even things like getting tickets right and, you know, sort of just things haven't gone to plan. There's been a very naive approach to everything.
Well, I've been a proponent of the ownership. I met Mr. Khan, but this is where I will agree with you. I agree with you on the inexperienced naivete, I guess you'd say, a combination of being a little bit naive and not being used to how things are done. And I think it's, you know, I think that's a factor. And listen, the buck does stop at the top. He is the owner, so I understand why supporters would be upset at Shah Khan, because, you know, again, it starts at him. But really, you know, it starts with him on rebuilding Fulham as well, getting the right people in place, and to get us moving forward, or have the right plan to move us forward. And right now it really is, unfortunately, I can't believe we are in April, Scott, and we're talking about survival. I think we're going to survive, But we're not there yet. And until we have gotten across the line, we're going to be talking about this, and then hopefully I'll be talking about next season, because that's what I really want to be talking about. But listen, before we move forward, I do want to mention this because I wanted to get a flavor for what the phone supporters thought, who was the man of the match. So I'm just going to share some of those. Because, again, in a 1-1 draw, I thought it would be interesting to get their thoughts. So I put it on the College Talk Facebook page. So we'll start with John Mason. He just said the linesman played a blinder for Charlton. Ed Huser said Dan Byrne. Tomina Rahman said Byrne. Paul Watkins said Turner. Ben Reed, no one really shown for me. Byrne and Turner did a decent job at the back, as did Husband at left back. An excellent loan signing, and I would tend to agree with Ben on that. Frustrating to see our players, this is Ben as well, surrounding the linesmen after their goal. Not as bad as the Leeds game, but still not good to see. And Scott, that's something that you and I already talked about. I totally agree with that. I don't like that at all. Judith Hopcroft said it was very frustrating that none of the Fulham players were capable of putting in a decent cross or taking a decent corner. Alan Daly said Dan Byrne in a dead heat with Smith. Simon Haneed, Dan didn't put a foot wrong. Byrne. Alan Hammersley, Dan Byrne by a mile. Marty Ward, the boat that took the fans down the river. I like that. David Allen, the fans for putting up with another sham of a game. Okay. So that just gives you a flavor for what the fans were thinking about man of the match and also a little bit about the match itself. All right, Scott, we just got a few minutes left. We've already talked a little bit about this, but I want to get your thoughts because David, Mike, and myself will be previewing Wigan tomorrow, but I want to get your thoughts on the Wigan match. I'll just ask you, what do Fulham need to do to beat Wigan on Friday? It's a massive match. I want to get your thoughts on that.
We need to score goals first to win, and we need to keep them out the other end. I mean, that's the aim of the game in football. It's not brain science, but it's kind of how we approach this game. We haven't got that much rest between, obviously, Charlton and Wigan games, so I'm hoping someone like Parker isn't too burnt out, because I think that he'll be a key again for us in a game like Wigan. He was missed against Brentford. And I just, regardless of what people say about Scott Parker, he is a leader on the pitch. You know, he's a rock in midfield, and he has got a technical brain to make things happen and pull strings. I would like to see us approach the game with a little bit more attacking sense. I think we're at home, so we can afford to. Wigan are renowned for not defending very well, the same as us, to be honest. So I've got a feeling that we can score goals and punish Wigan, but we need to do it in the right way. I think we might need to pull them slightly wider than we did with Charlton, and then let possibly Smith and obviously McCormack do the damage in the middle. But again, we need to be defensively sound, as we know, even though Wigan are down there, they do still have quality in their side.
Yes, they do.
We need to have another defensive display. I know we conceded against Charlton, but I still think we need to consider sticking with that back four, because there's a lot of kind of, you know, quality and experience there. I don't want to see too many changes in the side. Maybe probably starting Ruiz against Wigan instead of Kavanagh, and I think we should set up against Wigan. And I think with quality, we should hopefully nick something from that game.
Let me ask you, would you start Dan Byrne?
I would. We've tried every, apart from sticking the tea lady in there, we've tried every other combination at that back, and it's just not worked. I mean, whether it's Budrov and this and someone else and Hutchinson, and, you know, we've been too slow, we've been not good enough in the air. I like Turner, he's got the quality now. I think Dan Byrne brings the aerial presence, but with an older, experienced player like Turner to mop up after Dan Byrne at the back, I think it could work. I think you've got to stick with Dan Byrne moving forward now for Wigan and possibly the foreseeable games.
Okay, fantastic. And sticking with the back four, I definitely want to get your thoughts. I know you didn't get a chance to see this match, but I'll tell you a player that's impressed me. It's only been two matches. James Husband at left back. I think Scott has done more than Kostas Stafoulidis has done in an entire season.
Yeah. I mean, Kostas, don't get me wrong, he's only, what is he now, 19, 20, I think. I think he'll be a great prospect. But as an individual, I think he's another youngster that's been completely burnt out at that back. You know, he's been brought into a position. You know, he's played there by Magat quite a bit. You know, I think he's got a fantastic attitude, but he, again, has been, like most of the youngsters this year, has been burnt out in that position where we should have had somebody that could come in like a Husband or whatever and maybe swap the two around, you know, to give him a break. I think Kostas Stafoulidis is, you know, I'm not saying that he's had his time at Fulham, but I think in that position alone, he's been one of the ones that's been completely burnt out, to be honest.
I totally agree with that, and not that he's been terrible this season. He's been okay. Like you said, he's a young player. But I'm just telling you what I've seen so far from James Husband coming to us on loan. I know it's a small sample, but he really has given us a lift and has been dangerous going forward. I don't think he's been that much of a liability. Again, we could look back at the one goal. You know, again, I would have to look at it more closely to see how, you know, his role in giving up that goal. But overall, I think he's been an asset, and I look forward to seeing what he can bring in these matches coming up. And since we're talking about the back four, let's go to the midfield, because again, we're just talking about a loan signing. I want to get your thoughts about bringing in Danny Guthrie. You know, again, he played in this last match with Scott Parker, with Sean Kavanagh, and also Ryan Tunnicliffe. I'm curious your thoughts about Danny Guthrie, because I personally think, Scott, we've got nothing to lose with him because he's out of contract, and I think Fulham should play him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing we've got to lose with Guthrie, and I've got a couple of mates who are Reading fans, and they just say that apparently his overall attitude stinks.
Okay.
He's one of the typical players that, you know, I think when he was at Reading, he refused to travel to a few away games and bits and pieces. He's another player that starts off well, but as he kind of settles into a club, he kind of drifts off. But like you say, he's out of contract with Reading. He's on loan to us. He's got something to prove. So for, you know, this kind of period leading up to the end of the season, it's a bit of a no-brainer bringing him in. Should have had someone with that kind of calibre a bit sooner at the club, because
yes,
we've never really had any kind of cover for Parker, or, you know, we've had too many one-dimensional players like Tunnicliffe. I mean, you know, he's a great battler for the ball, but, I mean, sort of technically-wise, he's not that great at getting forward and making things happen. You know, and we really kind of lacked in that position, and Guthrie's a kind of a player that can also maybe step in for Parker when he becomes a little bit too tired in games. Parker can step back, Guthrie can step up, you know, and he can start with more creative. So, you know, we've got that flexibility. But again, you know, yes, me personally, it's a bit of a no-brainer. But again, it was a move that was made too late in the season. You know, again, we've got to try and gel them players. But I'm hoping that, you know, he's here now and, you know, one bit of brilliance from the guy or, you know, a decent game and we've got 3 points on the board. So,
and that's the way I look at it, Scott, because, again, he's playing for his next contract. So he's got to be motivated for, you know, money-wise. You know, again, he wants to play well. And it's funny because Gentleman Jim said something during the broadcast that I'm kind of nervous to mention, but I am going to mention it because again, it's high praise to put these two in the same breath. But he said that he was talking about spraying the ball around, and I'm paraphrasing. He said he hasn't seen anyone been able to do that since Danny Murphy. And when he said that, again, on the broadcast, it's like, I got to see this. You know, I got to watch the replay. So I watched the replay. I could see what he's saying. But again, that's, you know, again, it's just talking about how we could move the ball around and spray the ball around. I could see it, but he's not Danny Murphy. So again, I just want to I want to preface that he's not Danny Murphy. But just, you know, again, the ability to pass the ball, I could see where Gentleman Jim was going on it. It was just difficult to hear that comparison, but I see, you know, he was trying to make a point that we really haven't had anyone, Scott, he's right about this, that they have been able to spray the ball around since Murphy has left. And when you have someone that could actually do it, I guess that's why you make that comparison.
Well,
but listen, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say quickly, he can be our Danny Murphy-type player in the Championship. I mean, obviously not in the Premiership. He's proved that he's not been able to play there. But since getting rid of Danny Murphy, I mean, even in the Championship, we've had too many sort of one-dimensional players, and we've not had somebody that can spray a ball about. You know, he was doing it against Brentford, but the only problem was it was just seemed to be him in midfield. He had no one to pass to. So, you know... But no, I think we'll get some positives from him, I believe.
I think so as well. And just quickly up front, you know, again, I know you know the big concern with Matt Smith and you know again his ability, you know, being the big guy up front. I have to tell you real quickly, he surprised me. I think he has more ability with his feet than I thought, and I think he's given us something with that combination of him and McCormack that could be valuable the rest of the way.
I agree. If you look at them 2 minute sort of replay, he does that little flick thing, doesn't he, on the end of the area where he drags the ball back under his feet, but he doesn't get the shot off. No, for a big lad, he's good with his feet. I mean, yeah, I mean, people give him the wrong conception, but I mean, Christ, if you put him up against Roddy Ager and say who's better technically as a player, it's Matt Smith every day.
It's crazy. Well, listen, Scott, before we go, I just want to say thank you for coming on and doing this with me today. I really appreciate it. You did an excellent job. I know you didn't get a chance to watch the match, but we could really still have some really good conversation about it. So I want to thank you.
No, that's fine. It's been a pleasure. Where were the other retrobates tonight, Russ? Russ, were they busy or?
What was that?
Where were the other guys tonight? Were they busy?
Oh,
or?
I'm sorry. David's playing football, and Mike, I believe, had to work late. David does his shows with me. Unfortunately, he couldn't do it tonight. So I'm very thankful that you could come on along with Kyle Bond. Kyle could only come on for a little bit and really help me out. I really appreciate that.
No, it's always been a pleasure for us.
And I just need you on more often because you really have some great commentary, my friend. I really enjoy you coming on, and you are welcome anytime.
No, I will do. Well, hopefully, let's get moved and bits and pieces got that going at the moment. I can maybe do a few more shows, Russ. So it's always been a pleasure anyway. So.
Okay, fantastic. Before we go, I want to mention this. On our next episode tomorrow, we're going to be previewing the Wigan match, and I'm going to be having on a special guest, and scheduled to appear is going to be Rebecca Williams, and you can actually see all the videos with her father on the FulhamFC.com website. And I'm going to be talking to her about Rebecca's marathon, and we're going to go into detail talking about what she's trying to do along, you know, for her father and everyone dealing with prostate cancer. So, again, just want to mention that Rebecca will be joining us tomorrow. I'm looking forward to having her as a guest on the show. And if you do want to help out her cause, you can text Fulham to 70004. To donate £5. So please feel free to do that. I've also put the videos on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, and you can see that, and it also tells you how you can donate.
Yeah, it's all right. We put it on Friends of Fulham as well, so all the information about it is there as well, Russ.
Yeah, it really is. You know, what she's doing is wonderful, and I just want to help in any way I can, so I'm glad that I can have Rebecca on. Well, that's it for the show. For Scott Tanfield and Kyle Bond, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, Scott.
Yep. See you, Russ. Cheers.
Bye. Cheers. Boys and girls.